Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic. Covenstead is brought to you by the co-creators of Ironbound, Guardians of Nirvala. Ironbound is a fantasy TTRPG about witches versus machines. Become one of the brave Ironbound and use your magic to defend Nirvala from the mechanized locust-like apothecary.
So, like, how you basically use and interpret magic in your life compared to how it's often done in games and this kind of stuff to, you know, kind of show the different ways that it can be done, that it hasn't been done before, kind of thing like that, you know.
Cool. We can also talk about, like, how you can bring magic into your games, too, because I do that often. I do stuff that kind of, you know, helps guide the energy and everything, but.
Ooh, okie dokie then. Hello, listeners, and welcome to an episode of Covenstead. My name is Todd, and I am here with my coven mate extreme, Danny. Danny, say hello to everybody.
Hello. Hello.
So what are we going to talk about today? We have this list of like six or eight topics that we have been toying with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we were starting to talk about narrowing it down to magic in general, because magic is such a huge influence in the whole purpose of the show and for you in particular. So how about we talk about that? You know,
okay.
Let's start very broad and then we'll work our way down to much more narrow topics, but let's cover the big one.
Right. Well, okay. So first off, we're going to talk about magic, which is really cool. And I think the first thing that I want to say is, you know, anyone listening who's kind of interested in any of this stuff, you know, I'm just one person. I'm one person who practices. And so there are many different opinions and many different perspectives out there about magic and religion. So just throw that caveat in there. This is all my own personal perspective. And before we get into magic itself, I want to really quick give some definition. This is also in the book. I wrote a big, long difference between paganism, Wicca, and witchcraft. So let's talk about the difference between those real quick so we can get into what magic is and how it works in games and stuff like that. So paganism in general is basically mostly any non-Abrahamic religion, mostly. Kind of definitions flip and flop and kind of get tweaked and nuanced. But in general, any religion that's non-Abrahamic monotheistic religion is pagan, mostly. So that's the big umbrella. And under that, a ton of different religions fall. And Wicca is one of those. Wicca is a nature-based religion. Nature has holidays and, we revere the god and goddess as aspects of the greater power and nature as manifestations of those things. We celebrate the turning of the year. We're coming upon Yule in our holidays, just for in case anyone is curious. Yule is going to be on December 20th this year. It is the longest night of the year and pagans use it as a time of reflection. And, use it as a time of reflection and getting through knowing that there's going to be light ahead and planning for planting seeds to be grown later and stuff like that. But that's in general. So Wicca is a religion, following the god and goddess. Witchcraft is the practice of witchcraft. It's not a religion, it's a craft. Many Wiccans also practice witchcraft. Some don't. Some witches don't practice Wicca. So you can be a Wiccan and not be a witch. You can be a witch and not be a Wiccan. Understand? Wicca is the religion part and witchcraft is the crafting spells and doing magic and doing rituals for different things aspect of it. But some people are just Wiccan and they worship the Gaan goddess and they do all that and they don't practice witchcraft at all. And some witches, I mean, there are many different witches of many different types and belief systems and things like that, that have their own type of magic and witchcraft. And so many, like I said, many Wiccans, sorry, getting allergic this morning. Many Wiccans are witches, but some aren't. And some witches are Wiccan and some aren't. So that's the thing we should know before we start. But I guess I should ask, what do you think? What do you feel about magic before we get into, now that we kind of got the difference in who uses magic, witches using magic, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're Wiccan or pagan. And I explain this difference in the book, but.
Yeah. In Ironbound. I think, oh, maybe too, like, let's get a better kind of definition of witchcraft and witches in general too, because I can imagine quite a few people. I can imagine any people who follow my work coming into this podcast going, huh? Mm-hmm. So maybe let's get a little kind of definition of that too.
Yeah. Well, like I said, witchcraft is basically, to sum up, it is doing things to direct energy. It's basically manifesting energy, gathering energy, summoning energy, and directing energy to get outcomes that you want. At the very basic, simple form, what is magic? There's energy in the universe. There's energy in us. There's energy in the universe. There's energy all around. And what witches generally do is, through various means, you can meditate, you can chant, you can visualize, you can just do a simple routine, all to get into the mind space where you can like focus that energy on what you want to focus on. And that's essentially what magic is, like doing the things necessary to kind of focus your mind to push that energy in a direction that you want it to go. And always with the intention of not, you know, hurting anybody else. As we say, you know, as it harm none, do as ye will. So as long as it's not hurting anybody else, you know, use that energy for what you need it for, you know. Whether that be regulating emotion, whether that be trying to solve a problem, whether that be anything really. You can come up with some kind of ritual to direct energy to that purpose. And that's essentially what magic is. It's all it is at the most essential form, just using your mind in ways to get a mindset to direct that energy to where you want it to go.
Yeah. Kind of like how chi is viewed in other cultures and other beliefs and everything like that, as being this energy that's within, you know, to be harnessed, accessed, you know, controlled, and those kinds of things.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, as far as how I've always looked at magic, for me, it's always been a fantastic thing. Like for me, when I would hear the word magic, that wasn't referring to stage magic, you know, illusions and that kind of stuff, David Copperfield. It was always something fantastic. It was always fireballs and lightning bolts, and that just comes from decades of fantasy gaming where, right, you know, everything was very flashy, flamboyant, gestures, spell components, you know, the works, spell books, prayers, you know, like the whole legion, you know, thousands and thousands of pages of spells that have been built over the decades. That's how I've always kind of looked at it. And it wasn't until I started talking with you about these very things that it was just, you know, I got a different look and appreciation for another way of looking at magic beyond just like, I can blow a hole in that wall.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because realistically, what we term magic is just, at least as far as witches are concerned, are just really like I said, moments where you kind of feel part of something greater than yourself and are able to like use that, you know, to help yourself or to help others or to figure something out, you know, we all need that sometimes. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot quieter than most people, you know, imagine when we talk about how it's really used. But, and, you know, magic is not always, as I think I talked about in the session zero, is not always about like, oh, I'm a witch and I'm going to do this spell and I'm going to get my candles and I'm going to get my herbs and I'm going to do this and that. Magic comes in many different mundane things and comes in many different other things that people engage in all the time. And they don't realize that they're like creating magic in a way for themselves to get themselves in a certain headspace. Like somebody makes a playlist, right? For when they're writing, right? They're writing a book, they're writing something. So they decide they're going to make a playlist that they're going to listen to while they're writing to help them get in the mindset. What is that, if not some kind of ritual magic that they are performing to get themselves into the mindset to write?
Yeah.
It's stuff like that people do all the time, right? Like that people do all the time. I'm really sad, so I'm going to watch this movie and it's going to help me feel better. What is that but you trying to manifest energy by watching this entertainment to give your brain a new sense of energy, the dopamine, the shift your energy? That's what it is. You know, all those things are a form of magic too. Anytime you're trying to shift your focus, direct your focus, your purpose to something else, and you're using means to do so, you know, that's all like what magic is. That's what magic does, you know? So.
Yeah. And it's a lot of that too. I've been discovering, I've been getting back into meditation, which I hadn't done for quite some time, but this time I'm doing it, I guess, with a little bit more tutelage. Whereas before I just kind of made it up and did my own thing, which was, I'm going to remain perfectly still, but aware of my surroundings so that if someone tries to poke me on the shoulder, I can do the whole thing you see in, like, you know, 1970s Shaw Brothers films where just grab the person by the arm without ever opening my eyes. That was always my impression of meditation. Yeah. But I've been turning to it this year just with, you know, I think like with a lot of people, starting to, you know, have struggles and needing to deal with things on a personal internal level. I started getting back into meditation and I started using the app Headspace, which has a lot of great sessions and, you know, basically kind of teaching you how to, you know, get into a meditative state that works for you.
Right.
And one of the things that they talk about a lot is the state called mindfulness, which is that awareness of yourself and what's going on. And a lot of what I was seeing and hearing about mindfulness sounding very similar to a lot of the ways that I've heard you, and even just now talking about magic, that sense of knowing what is going on and doing what you need to do to kind of help that energy or your emotions, your mentality, help you focus in a certain direction to be able to kind of, you know, push some things aside, whether or not it's for physical pain or stress, you know, or any of this other kind of stuff. So, and I mean, when they talk about these kind of things, this is one of the things I've been finding really interesting in the readings that I've been doing from the things that you've sent me. I have a friend here, very close to where I live, actually, I used to work with, and she has, you know, practiced, you know, some witchcraft and picked up a couple of books and has loaned them to me. And as I'm going through them, I'm seeing a lot of this overlap, you know, in this approach, much in the same way, you know, like a lot of different, say, religions are basically making the same point, but they're using different stories, different characters, different, you know, different approaches to basically kind of share a very similar message, but with a unique bent, you know?
Yeah. And witches use meditation a lot. guided meditation, visualization, meditation, which is used that a lot to get into that mind space of, you know, I need to be, you know, it helps you, you know, organize your thoughts, you know, so that you can direct your energy where it needs to go and be aware of what's going on. But yeah, it's mindfulness that you can be aware of, oh, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's going on. And kind of being able to kind of see it from a kind of a little more separate perspective when you get into that meditative state and work through it and kind of let your unconscious mind help you work through it and everything as well. So yeah, yeah. I mean, we use meditation a lot to do that as well. I mean, if you have nothing else and you need to do some energy work, as a, you know, meditation is, you know, you don't need anything for it, you know, just yourself. So
yeah. Yeah. And it's been one of the things where what I have been finding is how helpful that approach has been with my neuroplasticity, which is basically kind of retraining my brain to overcome the damage that it's taken over the years. And in that process, I have experienced things that I would definitely describe as being magical, in the sense of, like, it's very difficult to explain to someone, unless they have an open mind to, you know, something different outside of their regular POV, you know, someone who has actually been through and experienced that kind of thing themselves. So, like, about 11 years ago, I was involved in a really nasty car accident, hit my head pretty bad. I'd already had a couple of concussions, which is pretty good for someone who never played sports.
Well, we're glad you're okay.
You know, but it took some time. So for the longest time, I had difficulty concentrating. I had memory issues, memory gaps. I also come from a family where dementia runs pretty deep. So I was already aware of the fact that I needed to keep better care of my brain, probably more than any other part of my body. Like, if I had a family that had a history of heart conditions, I'd know better to take care of my heart in doing various ways through diet and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So in the process of kind of getting myself back on track, and because at the time, I don't know about now, but at that time, there really wasn't much in the way of kind of like recovery assistance or therapy or anything like that for this kind of thing. It was basically, in many cases, it wasn't believed what I was going through. So I had to research and learn these kind of things myself. And especially with a lot of the meditation and everything that I've been doing combined with the neuroplasticity, I have been teaching my brain to basically become an abstract visual thinker, in that when I get into a really deep trance, when I really get into a deep meditative state and it's just right at the perfect moment, I am actually able to visualize game mechanics, for example. I can, you know, those moments in movies where you see someone just like numbers are flying around and
they're calculating.
Yeah, it's like that, but it's all very internal. And I couldn't even begin to describe. It's just like, you know, well, what does a die roll look like? It's just like, I can't tell you. I just know it when I see it. This squiggly thing represents this, you know, and I'm going to move this over here. Oh yeah, that works.
Yeah.
So I would describe that as being very magical, because it is weird as fuck to describe that too. Like, I wouldn't explain that to my dad, who is a very literal, straightforward kind of person, because he'd be concerned about what I've been doing in my spare time.
Yeah. I mean, we have all sorts of detritus in our brains. You know, we have all sorts of, throughout the day, you know, noise, you know, either stimulation coming from the outside or our brains constantly readjusting and holding in it, you know, all the things we need to do that day, all the different procedures that our brain knows, you know, how to dial a phone, you know, how to use a phone, how to use a computer, research this, research that. It's just, it's detritus, you know, it just kind of, you know, builds up throughout the day, you know, just stimulus here and communicating here and thinking about this thread over here and thinking about this other thing over here. It builds up, you know, and what meditation kind of does, you know, at first, you know, when people start meditating, they get upset because they keep getting like distracted, right? And brain things come in and they're like, oh, that's not the way it's supposed to be done. But honestly, that's how the first part of getting to a meditative state works, because you've got to get that detritus that's coming into your brain, acknowledge it and let it go. So part of that meditative process is getting into the meditative state. A lot of people expect themselves just to shut down immediately and be in a meditative state. And it doesn't work that way at all. You know, that is part of it. Like that getting into a meditative state is part of it. That letting go of that brain detritus that then allows you to see clearer, you know, kind of clear away everything and see a bit clearer what situation you're in or, you know, what you need to think about and stuff. And then when you're in that point, then you can start directing things and you can start saying, you know, putting your mind to a problem or a purpose and stuff like that. And that's essentially it, you know, it's kind of, you know, like I said, some people use meditation, some people use other things, you know, it all depends on the person finding what works for them. But meditation is a very popular one for sure. Doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that I've really noticed too, is that, yeah, the replicating, that experience again has been something, and I'm still trying to kind of figure out, you know, how to get into that right space, you know, and everything like that. But one of the things that I have found is that looking at it in the same way that witches in the books that I've been reading about would prepare. So if they're cooking witches, and for them it's recipes, they cook things and that's how they, you know, make their magic. Then mm-hmm. for them being in the kitchen is part of that. That's one step into getting into that particular state. And that's how I've started looking at it too. It's just like, okay, so when I was able to do this, this is what was going on in my head. And this is where I was sitting and how I was sitting, you know, so I am able to start using that to start developing, you know, kind of what I'm hoping will be a more regular ability to be able to fall into a similar trance like that.
Yeah.
Whereas now it just seems to kind of happen sporadically, you know, and I'm still trying to figure these things out. But yeah, I would definitely describe that effect as being very magical, which was unexpected. Because before when I did it, it was more of like a, you know, oh, I just need to look like I'm still holding perfectly still. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. That was meditation. I was never doing any of the mindfulness that actually comes with the whole point of being meditative. Right. I was just doing an impression of a gargoyle before. That was it. So that's why I think that's why it's made it a little easier for me to have a better understanding of what people are talking about when they talk about magic in the 21st century, because I now kind of feel like, oh yeah, like when I do this kind of thing. And, you know, in some cases too, I also find that it's a little easier for people who have done certain types of drugs are able to kind of understand this, because like for anyone who's done, you know, mushrooms, and I have no idea about this myself because I'm not really into taking anything that is considered mind altering, even though I'm probably a hypocrite in some ways. But anyways, when it comes to that, I've never experienced, but from what I've heard people talking about, it almost kind of like strips away those kind of barriers and just lets the mind go wild. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just like, we're just going to let Salvador Dali take over for a little while. Okay. And then you're just going to sit back and enjoy the ride and try not to run out in front of traffic.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah. But I mean, yeah, that, you know, that whole understanding of what magic can really be beyond, you know, the standard stuff that we see in mm-hmm. media and all this other kind of stuff, I think is a really important distinction.
Well, you're not wrong. Cause I mean, mind altering drugs have a long, long thousands of years history of being used in different cultures for magical purposes. like yeah. Native Americans and Central America, even Europe and all sorts of other places all have histories of using those. They're, you know, people, they're holy people. They're, you know, whatever they were called in that particular culture, but there's thousands of years history for using drugs for that purpose. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
And that's where I think, you know, like from a gaming point of view, you know, and as game writers, designers, you know, having that different approach to how magic can be used in tabletop role-playing games, I think is a really interesting way to go, because so many cases it's very overt. It's very noticeable, you know, it's very flashy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, versus something that is a lot more internal, more harmonious, I guess, with the setting itself. It reminds me of the Earthdawn campaign setting that has been around for, you know, like maybe about 25 years or so. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really resonated with me about that setting was the fact that that magic basically touched everything. And the way that you're able to connect with it is through your name. And it was one of those things where it was such an important value in the setting that the term name was always capitalized to signify its importance. And instead of being, you know, you are of this race or this species, you know, you are a name giver. You are one of the name givers. You have the ability to name things, and naming them is what allows you to focus the power and stuff like this, the energy that flows through it. But it was even to the point where, you know, there were standard skills where you could teach yourself to fight, for example, but then there were other things called talents that allowed you to have magic aid you in your fighting, whether or not it was this enhanced awareness of your surroundings, you were way more fluid, stronger, any of this other kind of stuff. So it was a really interesting, I think that was my first approach to like a different way of looking at magic in an RPG.
Yeah. I mean, historically RPGs, you know, do have that flashy, you know, magic. Think about, you know, D&D, the big one, Pathfinder, any other RPG that you can think of, even ones that have witches, you know, the magic is flashy. And that's not to say that Ironbound doesn't have magic, like flashy magic, because it does. I mean, the Ironbound can do some spectacular things, but it's made pretty clear that that's kind of an exception. It's kind of like what they've gotten in exchange for helping to protect Novella. But that magic does exist, and the magic that just exists normally in Novella is the kind that we witches use in the real world. It's much more of the slow, you know, guided energy, that sort of thing. But because there's a crisis, you know, it's kind of been stepped up for the Ironbound and stuff like that. But there is heavy representation of this is how Novellans use magic normally, and stuff like that. So there is that, you know, represented in the world, which you don't get to see, you know, very often. And even then, you know, using the magic that the Ironbound do, you know, it's not easy to do. And, you know, there's lots of stuff that goes along with it. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, magic in games and things like that, you know, you're playing a game, so you do want to be able to like do things you can't do in real life. But what I really wanted to see in our game was that, you know, yeah, you can do some things, but here's also a good representative of what you might see every single day as well. You know, just have that representation there as well, while the players are being, you know, they're also kind of seeing that, you know. And so they ever do run into, you know, a real witch or something like that, it's going to be like familiar to them. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was also something that we really wanted to make magic to be very fluid, very flexible, and also too very personal, because that is one of the things, you know, with witchcraft, it is your way of doing it,
right?
You know, and it, you know, and then in doing so, it was like, rather than penalize the things that really don't quite represent what, you know, witchcraft and Wicca stands for, such as being able to use it for more combat purposes. Rather than penalizing that, we basically incentivized using it for the more peaceful approaches. So mm-hmm. whenever you use it to help somebody in your coven, you have a chance of rolling better, mm-hmm. You know, encouraging rather than discouraging, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, that whole, it's also too, like we've taken a lot more of a narrative approach to how we want to use magic. And the thing that I like about that is it just allows you to kind of add on like little touches and everything like that. Even it's to the point where it's like, you know, you have a character whose hair is just always waving, you know, it always seems mm-hmm. to be in a breeze, even when there's no wind in sight. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or some kind of thing like that. And even those little touches I found, you know, like in the games of Ironbound that I've been running, people really have kind of levitated to that kind of thing. You know, just showcasing little ways that magic can be demonstrated in the setting, you know, even if it's like you have a character who's basically a Snow White, where animals just are drawn to her, mm-hmm. you know, and she has this way to communicate with them. And it's not something I've ever seen really explained as, you know, in any version as to why this, it just kind of is this thing that she is just able to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, I find that those little touches end up making a big difference. Being able to allow players to kind of elaborate on how they, you know, how they connect with magic and the effect that it basically shows to them, mm-hmm. I think is a really interesting way to kind of help unlock that kind of thing in players, to let them freeform it a little bit more versus the very specific exact spells that'll be written down. It can do this, it goes this far, you know, it can only last this long, all these other kind of things right. where, you know, like still broad definitions, but it's still a very specific application of a very specific spell,
right?
Which is a very different way of kind of playing things.
It is. And that, and like you said, I mean, that really reflects more how witches do things. Like every witch does things differently. You know, what's going to work for one witch is not going to work for another. You know, one does their spell standing up because they feel like they need to, the other needs to be sitting cross-legged, one likes to use candles, the other uses stones, you know, or any variety of things. You know, it's all what's going to work for that person, so it reflects in the game. You know what I mean? Like, because that's how, and everybody has their own specialties, their own things that they're really, really good at doing. You know, some people are really good at, like, you know, making, you know, oils and stuff like that, you know, to help people and infuse them with magic. Some people are really good at that, and that's what they do. Some people are really good at, you know, divination and, you know, doing that and kind of interpreting that and helping people with that. You know, everybody has their own stuff. So for Ironbound kind of reflects, you know, like, what does that person want to do? Where does it stem from? How does it look, you know, and all that sort of thing, because, you know, witchcraft is an extremely individual thing. So yeah, we wanted to have that freedom there for people to be able to kind of add these little details to their character that make them unique, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even if they have the same role in the group and stuff like that, they'll be completely different from another one in another group, you know?
And yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, I just had a little point and I just kind of lost it there. Oh yeah, here we go. So, I mean, it also, too, it's really kind of made me aware of something I've been really thinking about when it comes to just media in general about the handling of magic, is that technology nowadays, I find, is being treated as if it's magic in a lot of media, in the sense that it's unexplainable, but capable of many incredible things. Mm. So, you know, whenever... You know, okay, so for example, Iron Man in the MCU movies, the stuff that he is able to build and that his builds are able to do is basically just kind of shrugged off as, oh, it's technology. It's very highly technically advanced. but it's mentioned in the same way as if, like, you know, you just look over the GM and say, like, how can that ship fly? And they just say, it's magic. They cast an air spell on it. Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. When otherwise it would just be like, you know, well, hold on a sec. It can't just be that simple. So it's like, so it floats up in the air, but then what? How does it come down? You know, like, so I find in many cases magic can be done, and especially too with quite a few like homebrew campaigns that I've played in over the years, where I remember that we were playing in this one. And Martin, if you're listening, you know, like, it was still funny. But anyways, he basically gave our characters the equivalence of cell phones, but it was just magic. You know, it was like a crystal on the end of a stick kind of thing. And then we could use it to communicate with our boss back at home base.
Nice.
Who would give us directions on where we need to go next and everything. But when it was described to us, it was physically described of what it looked like. And then it was basically straight away to, it's basically a cell phone with magic. And that's almost like a quote. So that's this interesting thing that I find that for a lot of people, it's just a way to cheat, you know, like there's magic in the world. And now we can just come up with a bunch of wacky stuff. There's whatever, you know, like you look at Eberron, the old campaign setting for D&D.
Right. Yeah.
That's one where the whole idea of magic being a form of technology. So it's just like, you want to have a train? Done. It's a train, but it's fueled with magic, right. You know, and then it kind of opens that up to, you know, a bunch of stuff like that. Yeah, so I mean, like, it's interesting, but then at the same time, too, I find it can also be a little lazy, personally speaking, where it just kind of, you kind of gloss it over, and it just looks like, you know, like the way that we in the 21st century are about, you know, like gasoline and oil and everything. It's just like, oh, no, we just use it to do things, you know, like we just put the stuff in our car and then our car moves. That's it. No problem. When in fact, it's way more complicated than that.
Right.
You know, and that's the part where it's just like, you know, seeing that connection that a setting that a world has with magic and how it's actually integrated, I find to be a really interesting dynamic and way more telling about what you can do with the game other than, you know, well, there's all this magic and we can do a bunch of stuff. We can bring people back from the dead. But what we can't do is create a police force that's going to stop everybody from raising armies of the dead. No, we're just going to leave that up to a random party of adventurers and hope that they're going to do the right thing. You know, it's like, I would think that a society that can do this kind of magic would have a much better control. Or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I find it can be a little lazy in some cases. It's just, it's a little filler. Well, how does that work? It's magic. How does that work? Tony Stark build it. Okay, done.
Right. Yeah. You know, it can be kind of a deus ex machina, you know, magic gets you out of it and stuff like that. But yeah, and in Novella, I like to think that, you know, we have, you know, it's a purpose, you know, where the magic comes from and what it's used for and what you can use it for and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, I mean, magic is interesting in how they put it in games and stuff, and sometimes using just to explain things or just using, you know, in a much more like direct way. You know, magic has always been very interesting. And because magic is such a all encompassing thing, there's so many ways out there that people have determined, you know, people can do magic, you know, like if you look at all the role-playing games that are out there and the different ways they do magic or don't do magic, you know, there's a lot, and it just goes to show there's a lot out there and there's a lot of room out there for different ways of doing things. I mean, some have it where, you know, magic's illegal. Some have it where, you know, magic is incredibly difficult. Some have it where magic is easy. Some have it where you do magic through verbal stuff. Some people have, you know, you have to have an item, you know, all sorts of stuff, you know, like, I mean, magic, you know, you do it through these cards or you do it through, you know, this ritual or you do it through, you know, whatever. You know, so there's all sorts of different ways to do it. Magic is a huge encompassing thing and has been done many, many different ways in role-playing games, both good and bad, you know?
Yeah. 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 And there always seems to be kind of two ways of approaching it. One of them being a very narrative way that explains why you have to do things in order to cast certain spells. And then there are basically mechanical ways, which are this process exists in order to balance off with the other components of the game. Like in order for us to have magic, it has to work with our hand-to-hand combat system, because we don't want to have a completely different game for spellcasters. They need to be able to play, you know, together. But mm-hmm. we also don't want to have, you know, like, well, there's 18 steps for casting a spell and 3 steps for swinging a sword. You know, you'd have to be pretty committed to playing that wizard if you're willing to go through that long of a turn.
Yeah, exactly.
Like going back to Earthdawn, one of the things that I really liked about it was they had a really good narrative and mechanical explanation for spellcasting, because what happened was that the world basically, the game takes place on this, you know, continent called Barsave. That was basically every, you know, 1,000 years or so, these beings known as horrors from the astral plane basically invade. And what they are actually drawn to the level of magic that exists on the world. So the more and more prevalent magic becomes, the bigger the portal will be when they arrive. And then what they do is they go into these underground bunkers called cairns, and they basically hide out until the horrors are gone. When the game was first published, and it's become a lot more extensive since then, but when it was first published, everyone had just started coming out of these cairns, and the horrors weren't quite gone. And so what had happened was that they had corrupted magic. And so all the spell preparation, you know, the verbal, somatic, you know, components and everything like that were done because you needed to filter out the impurities of magic in order to cast a pure, clean spell. So basically you had to run it through a filter, and that filter would be, you know, the hand gestures, the verbal components and everything else to it. You could cast raw magic, but it was risky because there could be a huge backlash. You wouldn't be able to control it. It definitely draws the attention of horrors. You know, so it's like you're putting a big beacon on yourself. But it was really neat how they did that, is that they explained why you are doing this in the game. And then mechanically, it also made sense as to like, well, this is actually what you're rolling for. You're not rolling to actually control the spell. You're rolling to make sure that you're able to cast it safely without something going wrong on you, the individual. So, you know, versus things like D&D where, and I'm sure there's a supplement out there, somebody has explained it, but in D&D, you cast a spell and for the most part, it's gone. You got to wait until you rest and re-memorize or pray for it again. And I've never seen any kind of explanation for that. It just is. That's how it is. You know, they got the idea from the Dying Earth series of books, and they just kind of rolled with it for mechanical purposes. That, to me, that exists simply as a balance to make sure that you can't just cast Wish over and over and over and over and over again. But there's really no reason for it. That's just the way that it's always been.
Lots of different ways to do things, you know, and how magic works and stuff. You know, it's really interesting, you know, if you start looking at how they have done magic in games over the years in various different ways, you know, magic, you know, you've had some versions where there's good magic and bad magic. You have versions where magic is neutral and it's the person who uses it. You know, you have, I mean, there's just all sorts of ways to go about it, you know, and they all say something about the game. So whenever a game includes magic of some kind, you know, it has to make sense that, you know, how it gets handled has to make sense with the world and how the world works and themes of the game that you're trying to get across. However you do it, you know, if your theme is, you know, desperation, like you want to have a game where people are desperate and stuff like that, and they're just trying to survive, and there's magic, that magic is going to look very different than if you have a world where, you know, magic is divided by class, let's say, you know, certain class of people has magic and certain other kids don't. Those two types of worlds are going to be very, very different in how you're going to present magic to them. So I guess all this to say, now that I'm thinking about it, is that magic in the game is used as a tool to reinforce the type of themes and the type of things you're going to have in your game. Like, yeah, that's what it's used for.
Yeah. So if it's a game about preservation, you know, about restoring the balance in nature, you know, you want your magic to be.
Is there a game like that? Is there a game that's going to be coming out like that? Maybe.
You know, I want to say that there is, and like, and with a lot of different supplements and adventures already in the queue and everything, but it's escaping me at the moment. You know, if we think about it, we'll put it in the show notes.
We'll show it in the show notes.
But it also gets me thinking too, there's interesting ways where magic has, I've seen magic being used to get into the social dynamics of a game. And I'm thinking of this one that is still, to my knowledge, only in an Ashcan format from Jason Pitt, and it's called Circles of Power. And in that one, basically only marginalized people have access to magic. And the people of the dominant cultures, you know, so basically, let's shorthand it. White people ain't got magic.
Right.
But everybody else does.
Right.
And yet they're still the marginalized people. And so, you know, it's a really, I mean, just that premise alone was something that got me. And
I've never heard of it till you just mentioned it. So
yeah, I mean, it's powered by the apocalypse, and just the way that everything is set up really leads itself to be able to use magic to get into, you know, class systems, you know, societal hierarchy, and all this other kind of stuff, you know, while also being able to incorporate the idea of like casting a spell that picks up a tree and uses it to like, you know, bash an army to bits, you know.
Right.
So those kind of things, I like, you know, that use of magic to create allegory for a heavier topic, I find that shit fascinating.
Yeah, that's really cool. I hadn't heard of it, like I said, until you just mentioned it. So, but to get into kind of another topic that I wanted to mention about magic, we've kind of talked about magic and games and how it's used or not used. And we've talked about, you know, our thoughts on magic and what it is. But I also want people to know, if they're listening to this, that you probably already do. And I mentioned this in session zero too, that you already do magic when you're running a game, like essentially, because what, you know, if the definition of magic is getting together, getting into a different state and focusing energy on a singular purpose, that's exactly what you do when you're gaming. So, you know, you get together, y'all are trying to get into the same mindset of playing these characters that you're playing, and you create this energy, right? So, and I talked about this last time, you might hear me go on about kind of the meta-save state that can be, you know, you can listen to session zero, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how you can do things as a person running the game, or even as a player, to help yourself get in that immersive mindset that is essentially magic. So one way, if you're running the game, is like music, which I've already kind of mentioned at the beginning, that, you know, some people have a certain playlist or something like that that helps them get in the mindset. I know a lot of game masters do this and don't realize they're doing magic. My husband used to run the Quake soundtrack whenever we were doing Call of Cthulhu. So it's always associated with Call of Cthulhu in my head, you know. You know, it's stuff like that a game master can do by like having a certain playlist go on in the background, or queuing up an appropriate song, like say your players are going to a mall at Christmas time. So you queue up some Christmas music that's playing over the speakers while they're walking around, the characters are walking around the mall and stuff. So music is one way that you can bring magic into it. Props are another way that you can bring magic. If I had the time and money, I might have one little thing for each of my NPCs that they use. You know, one NPC might have a fan. One NPC might have a pipe. Another NPC might have a nail file. Another NPC might have one thing, right? And so when I'm running the game and I'm playing that NPC, I pick up that thing. And what that does is it creates the mindset in the player of, oh, I see that item. I know who I'm talking to. And it creates this association and more immersion because they're not having to figure out who you're playing right now. They know. So it kind of sidesteps that and creates kind of a deeper immersion. You know, getting a specific set of dice that you only roll when you're playing that game is another way, because, you know, you pull out those dice, your mind immediately starts going, okay, this is the game I'm using it for. This is the mindset. Anything that you can give your mind signals that this is what I'm going to do, and this is what we're doing, and this is the mindset I need to be in, is going to be helpful to you to kind of create that immersive experience in a game.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like battle maps, the miniatures, like you just mentioned, the whole thing with dice, I am very much a sucker for that. And even too, it's, you know, out of superstition more than anything else. You know, like, I don't want to roll these dice because these dice, you know, like they messed with me before, they cost me a character, that kind of stuff, you know? And yes. Like I have dice that I use when I'm the GM, and I have dice that I use when I'm a player. Because, you know, these dice, I always tend to roll low. And so as the GM, I'm not looking to, you know, beat the shit out of the characters. I'm looking to challenge them. So I don't always need to roll high. So I roll these ones when I'm the GM. But when I'm a player, I like to roll these ones because these ones tend to roll higher. You know, is that factually accurate? Probably not.
It's the mindset exactly. You have. And so there it is. You're creating this kind of energy narrative for yourself as to what mindset you're in at that particular time. And all of that stuff works too. Anything like, you know, costume pieces or, you know, when people do art of their character or have art commissioned, you know, and, you know, is it kind of because you're having to like think about your character, manifest it, tell the commission, you know, the person, you know, it's all this like manifestation of trying to create this world in your head and try to make it feel like it's real, which is essentially magic. You're taking all this energy, you know, I have the right dice, you know, or playing the music. I've got my character in front of me, so I know what they look like and stuff like that. And it's all creating that mindset to the one focus of getting immersed in this game and feeling what your character feels and doing what your character would do and stuff like that. And so anything you can do, hey, even smells and stuff like that, it can work.
Yeah. Exactly. Smell is such a huge trigger for memory. And in fact, based on the research that I've been reading, it's like, you know, smell seems to have a stronger connection to memory than any of the other senses. And it is one of those things where it seems to be because it can create a very, very distinct aroma that your brain can pick up on without any kind of confusion or something like that. It's definitely one of those things that you can use to. So an incense candle, a very specific incense candle or some kind of thing like this, or even the smell of your pumpkin spice latte just before you take that first sip.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's a friend of mine, Kieran, he's a fantastic artist, and he draws while he plays. And in many cases, he's drawing the different characters that we come across. Mm-hmm. And he'll draw sketches of the other PCs that he is playing with, because it just helps him be able to get into the character. And he's listening the entire time, even though he's not looking up for good portions of it and this kind of stuff. But that's part of his process, you know? Right. And it makes me think too of, you know, gamblers who just like, no, I'm not using that machine. I'm not using that slot machine. Oh, I'm not going to that table. Mm-mm, no, no.
Yeah. Yeah,
I lost $2,000 that one day in 25, you know.
is. It's you know, it's that belief, you know, people call it superstition or whatever sometimes, but it's that belief, you know, that getting yourself in the mindset that like these dice are unlucky or these dice are lucky, or you know, or getting memory attached to that. Yeah, this is the one I rolled when I, you know, crit that, you know, creature or whatever, you know, and you have, you know, stuff attached to it and everything like that. So anything, like smells and stuff like that, like You know, let's say, you know, your characters are going to be wandering outside a lot, you know, get one of those candles that smells like fresh cut grass or something, you know, like,
yeah,
why not, you know, like, why not do it, you know, or, you know, let's say your characters are, you know, your characters during the game are going to go to like a candy shop, you know, why not have some candy out or something like that, you know, like bringing, you know, trying to tie the tactile in the real world to the imaginary world in any way that you can is going to create that magical effect, that magical immersion that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Any way you can do it through any of your five senses, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, a lot of performers do that. Like even before we started recording and I was telling you, it's just like, oh, I'm just going to scarf down this donut really quickly, but I don't want to finish the whole donut because if I feel even remotely full, I get lethargic. I like to be on my toes and ready, and going on an empty stomach is, that's part of my process, so to speak, before I get ready to do any kind of performance, which includes being in a game. Because for me, that's a performance.
Right.
For some, you hear stories of a lot of stand-up comedians where it's like their process is puking in a garbage can. That's just what they've done, and it's just always worked. Yeah. They always do it, and you know, so yeah, it's just like this interesting, but looking at it as, you know, a way that once again the tabletop games and magic overlap, that entire process of preparation,
right,
you know, of mindfulness to be able to get into the spirit in the moment, brush aside, you know, like whatever crap you had to deal with at work that day or something like that. Okay, I'm going to get this out of my system, you know, and for some it's, you know, cracking open a bottle of wine, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like that. Yeah.
I taking a shower or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Like. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, or listening. Sometimes what I've done is, you know, I just listen to a very specific, you know, movie score on the way to a game, because most of the time I have to drive to wherever I'm going. And I just kind of use that to help get into the mindset of something. Any games where I'm not able to, and it's something I've really discovered over the last little while, having not actually been able to play any role-playing games other than a little bit of play-by-post for a while, I've really started to focus on what it is that helps get me into a game. And then, you know, it's to the point where it's just like, well, I'm not interested in playing games where I'm not able to get that same kind of feeling or sensation anymore. You know, like I don't want to half-ass it anymore. I want to put my whole ass into it.
Right, right.
And, you know, like there have been some games where I get into where I don't quite know what to expect out of this, or I'm a little unaware of the setting itself, or trying to figure out my character's place in it. And then it just feels very disjointed. And I imagine that to be very much the case of, well, like any times where I meditated, where, you know, my foot pain is just too much and I can't focus and I'm just not able to get into it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff. I find it seems to be very similar to, you know, like what you're talking about here. It's just, you know, everyone's got this process, and when you don't have it, it just kind of throws everything off in a way that you can't explain. It's just like, the game was good, it was fine. I just wasn't into it. It's just something about it wasn't there.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it happens, you know, I mean, so the whole idea is, I mean, it's the same with sitting down and writing and stuff too, you know, like we all have our process for sitting down. And of course, unfortunately, because, you know, we need money and we have deadlines, we can't always wait for the perfect storm of what we would rather have to work. We have to do it sometimes. And so, yeah, sometimes that will lead to game. You know, what we can do is try to set ourselves up to be ready and stuff like that. And that's what magic is all about. So even if you aren't particularly in the mood, you can do these things and try to get yourselves in the mood. Sometimes it won't work. You know, I mean, sometimes you're just too, you know, there's just too much. There's just too much in your head and stuff like that. And it's just like anything else. But, you know, I really encourage people to kind of think about that, to think about, you know, because we talked about what is magic, You know, we talked about, you know, magic being, you know, focus of energy, being able to focus, get a hold of that energy and motivate it forward, and how in games it is used to kind of show what the game is all about, how magic is used, kind of shows the themes and stuff like that. And then we talked about how you can even use it out of the game and stuff like that. And these are just all ways, and I would really encourage people to think about that, even if they don't believe in magic per se. But if they haven't given these ideas of what you do can help you get in the mindset of a game, they really should think about it. They really should think about it consciously and think about, you know, what can I do to help us get into the mindset of the game before we play?
Yeah.
You know, is it some phrase I say that kind of triggers everybody like, okay, we're about to play now, you know? My husband always says, so when last we left our intrepid heroes.
Yeah.
My husband always says that. And then we're all like, oh, okay, you know, we're getting started and stuff like that. You know, what can I do? Can I have some theme music playing? Can I have some sort of smell? Can I have something tactile? You know, I've done like real life puzzles, like with paper and stuff like that for my players to work with. You know, I've written out codes on paper and they've sat there and worked it out and stuff like that and had a blast, you know, and had a blast doing it. You know, it's like, and they were into it, you know, they were all in their character. They're trying to figure out this thing. And I had a real timer going because there was a bomb and stuff like that. And so, you know, I had a real timer going for them to figure it out and everything. So, you know, I mean, I would really encourage people, even if you don't believe in, I mean, I think as I put it last time, I think we've all had those sessions where you kind of feel like, you know, wow, you know, and you kind of feel emotionally drained after. You feel like you did something, you know what I mean? After playing, you know, you're kind of a little, you know, you need to recover a little bit because it was intense, you know, and you were into it. And that's what I'm talking about. And some people don't realize, like, you can do things to make sure that, at least help to make sure that most of your games are like that, because all that is kind of manifesting that energy. And there are certain things you can do it in a conscious way and not just an unconscious way and hope that everything aligns. You know what I'm saying? For the magic, like, there are things you can do to foster that, you know, to help encourage that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very ritual. It's very ritualistic, you know, the setting up for games, gathering around the table. And that
we always order from this pizza place. The pizza guy knows us, you know, like whatever, you know, hey, you know, he always brings Lay's chips and dip and, you know, whatever, you know, you have their own things that just speak, you know, this is game time now, you know, these are the things we do when this is game time now.
Yeah. You know. And I think it can be a lot more understandable for a lot of us to appreciate that now, because so many people had to get off away from the physical table and move into a virtual play space, which was something for, you know, especially to a lot of people of my particular generation, online gaming was always just like a, ugh, kids, they're doing it wrong. And then it was just like, oh crap, the kids are right. You know, like we, you know, because we couldn't get together physically, that awkwardness that I've heard a lot of people describe of trying to get into that new swing of things and that it completely changes the dynamic of the game. I've started to hear of some people say, it's like, you know, there are some sessions I think actually work better online because we're not screwing around. We're not getting off into side topics, you know, all this. We're focused, laser focused when we're going. But then there are other times where it's just like, this one's going to work a lot better for face-to-face because there's going to be more role-playing opportunities or, you know, whatever it is that works better for your group. So yeah, I think it's something that really deep down, I think a lot of people are able to understand a lot better. Yeah. And as a result, you know, really being able to appreciate those standard rituals that we all put into our game, whether or not it's prep time or actually sitting down to play. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a huge impact, and one small little change, you can really feel it, because role-playing games is a performance art. It's just on a much smaller scale in the sense of just like your audience are the people that are sitting at that table, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, in my game, we have a Spotify playlist that everybody has access to. So during our game, we put songs up there that like speak to like our character or a certain moment in the game or, you know, whatever, you know, a song makes us think about a particular situation with a couple characters and stuff like that. Like we had we have a couple characters who are like there is kind of an awkward kind of unrequited love thing going on between an NPC and one of the player characters. So we had a lot of songs there about like unrequited love and stuff like that on the playlist, you know, like, you know, and stuff like that, you know? So whenever you look at the playlist and you look at the songs, you kind of, you know, it makes it more like real, like you're adding more detail and you're adding more color to it. And so, you know, you can do those sorts of things to make, and really, like I said, those things are a form of like magic. You're trying to manifest that energy, you know, you're trying to manifest the same energy you had in the game, you know? So you listen to the song and it comes back and everything like that. And you're like, oh yeah, you know, that's so-and-so character's song, you know, like, all that. So yeah.
So it's not a strange concept after all, really. It's more so just a matter of this, you know, realization of what it is that we share. And I think that's also too, it seems to me like when I started kind of reaching out to people, like, you know, when I was first looking to see if there were any, you know, pagans or witchkins, witches and everything like that in my social circles who could help me understand some of these things, I was quite surprised by how many people actually reached out in some way or another, even if it was like, you know, my editor Vince, my longtime editor Vince, this was something that, you know, he was into in his 20s and he's got a bunch of books about it. You know, he hasn't paid much attention to it since, but mm-hmm. I was quite surprised by how many people I knew were into this. But then in hindsight, when I think about it, it's almost kind of not surprising to see a lot of people who identify as pagan in some way, shape or form within the tabletop gaming community, mm-hmm. because tabletop gaming seems to have really embraced, intentionally or not, embraced people who really have felt like they've been on the fringes, mm-hmm. in one way, shape or form. And you know, so it's the fact of being able to see where it is that we overlap, I think is a really interesting and important way to look at it, because, you know, like when I first, you know, was telling you, which is, you know, like mentioning you to my wife, and I said like, well, she's a witch. My wife goes, so like she casts spells and everything. And right away, her first impression was somebody trying to recreate Hansel and Gretel, because that was the only thing that she knew about that terminology. And when I said, you know, like, no, it's, they look at it much in the same way, like, you know, that I look at my meditation and everything else like this, you know, and this is, it's their way of looking at it. And if you look at it from how you are similar in other things, like she's big into board games. So I mentioned that, you know, it's like when we sit down to play, what are your standard ways? Like, what is your setup? What is it that you like to have set up? And she's like, well, I always want to make sure I have my drink. It's like, right. You know, like you know, if you don't have it, something is not right, you're going to get up and go get it. You know, it's like, she likes to specifically play on the couch, you know, sitting comfortably versus sitting at a kitchen table, kind of thing like that. And then once she was able to kind of see, oh, I see what's going on, then it really kind of takes away, like any kind of animosity towards that, you know, when we see what it is that we all share in common. Sure. So yeah, that's been an interesting way that I've really noticed all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I hope this has been good. We've gone over because we just had stuff and stuff and stuff to talk about. Yeah, well, I hope this has been interesting for everybody listening, and maybe you got something out of it. Let us know. You know, I mean, have you experienced stuff like this? What do you think about it? Is there anything in your games that you realize, oh yeah, we do that all the time, and it does kind of create, you know, What other things do you do that I may not, that we, you know, I may not have mentioned, or Todd may not have mentioned, or, you know, add on to it and let us know what y'all think.
Yeah. We'd definitely like to hear it. Even if it's one of those things too, you know, like what has been some of your more positive experiences with magic in games that you've been running? What are some of the, you know, even the worst examples, you know, like learning from things that, you know, do it wrong.
Yeah.
Oh no, it is always important to wait. Yeah, exactly. Where it's just like, I don't know what they were thinking, but you know, even when it's something that's trying to very specifically emulate, say, you know, witchcraft, and it's just like, no, you know, that it just didn't do the trick. It just seemed like really kind of tacked on kind of thing, you know, like, you know, I know I'm always interested to kind of, you know, look through the detritus of, you know, like really shady games, just to kind of see what worked and what didn't work, you know, kind of like do an autopsy on them, so to speak. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, we will have to get together again soon and do another one of these, and in the meantime, I hope everybody has a little magic and a little gaming in their magic, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye, everybody.